Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to White Wine Questions. I'm the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guests this week are 90s pop royalty. Three brothers who joined forces as a band when they were kids, going on to release one of the most iconic pop tracks of the decade that went to number one in 12 countries. Within a year, they had a multi-platinum selling album, Middle of Nowhere, and three Grammy nominations, and all before they could shave. In their home state of Oklahoma, they even have a day named after them, 6th of May, which they continue to celebrate with fans all over the world. As they approach their 30th anniversary, they're as busy as ever touring and getting ready to release their 11th album, as well as building their own beer brand and an ever-growing extended family with 15 children between the three of them. I'm impressed. I can't wait to hear what they've got to say today. So let's dive in, shall we, and dial them up. It's Hanson. Welcome to the show, Isaac, Taylor, and Zach.
Hey.
Hello.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, that's quite an intro.
Yeah, you covered it all.
Thanks.
Not all, but a lot.
No, listen, there's a lot. Yeah. 30 years.
When you say that we're, you know, pop royalty with that level of authority, I'm just expecting a knighting soon.
Yeah, exactly. I think I need to make a decree as pop royalty.
Just, just drop me your emails. I'll see what I can do, yeah? Yeah. It's a long time, though, boys, 30 years. I'm 25 years since the release of Umbop and 30 years marking what was the beginning of the band, obviously not the beginning of your time together.
Yeah, it's a lifetime. I mean, it's one of the interesting things. We've been sort of marking that point with this tour. And I think one of the strange things about it is that it feels like, in some ways, it has been all these lifetimes. Other things feel like they were a second ago. But there's so many things that have happened from launching the band to getting signed, having that breakout, starting our own label, there after our second record, then, things like a symphony tour we did a couple years ago where we traveled around the world with orchestras. You have all these milestones and you just keep moving forward and moving forward. And we incredible fan base that we've stayed connected to, really been focused on having that community side of things. You turn around and you go, wow, it's 30 years. How did that happen?
And actually, your appetite remains voracious. I mean, on paper, you think, are they just doing this to get away from all their children?
maybe
the beer company. I mean, it's good to brew your own beer as a business.
Yeah, exactly. Also, a very strong parenting aid. But actually, it's not about escaping your children or drinking your own beer, your own Kool-Aid, if you like.
It's the fact that you do keep moving things forward. But like the fact that you decided to go and tour with the symphony orchestra, it's a logistical nightmare. It's a money pit. It's a passion play. You don't do that to get rich. You do that to get fed. You know, yes. Musically fed, I mean.
Right on. Right on.
Absolutely.
I agree with you.
It is a money pit, and it is really difficult. But it was extremely gratifying. And we, you know, for us, it's... We started off with music. It'll always be about creating music. Mm-hmm. Yes, you have fame that goes with the, you know, the some degree of success, but it has to be something you're creating that you're interested in creating. And the good thing is when you make something you're proud of, regardless of whether you have millions of fans, you can still sleep at night going, hey, that was something I'm proud of. And that was true with the symphony. And same with, you know, the new project that is basically three solo projects in one. It's just about moving forward. It's about being creative. And also having the gratitude for where you've come from, kind of merging those two things each time you come out with a new project and a tour.
Yeah, and I think also what I like about things like the String Theory project, or actually, frankly, like this latest record, is you're finding ways to reinvent yourself in some capacity. You know, like with the String Theory project, you had new songs next to old songs, and you were able to kind of take songs, very famous songs like Umbop, and reinterpret them and kind of work them out and kind of add new emotional layers to them. And with this latest record too, you're doing the same kind of thing where you're like, hey, normally we wouldn't kind of separate out a record quite this way and say, oh, this is Zach's portion, and Taylor's portion, and Isaac's portion. But at the same time, we've been doing it a really long time, and maybe it's a good idea to just go, hey, these are the bold colors of the brothers here, you know?
Colors of the band.
Separate out the ingredients. And it is, explain, will you, if you don't mind, the name of the album and what it actually means, because that you, it's because you are from a large family. It is literally your badges of identity, isn't it? You're color-coded, like a filing cabinet.
Yeah. Right. It's two things. One, growing up, we're the oldest three of seven kids, so you really had to color coordinate something to know what was yours. And Taylor was always red, and Isaac was always green, and I was always
this
blue.
Green sticker, that's my stuff.
But as we were talking about names for this project and talking about sort of, you know, color is something that goes into descriptive qualities of music and things, we realized, you know, red, green, blue is a color format where you can make every single color of the rainbow, and it happens to be sort of how we identified as kids. And so it was kind of a cool way to mix both of those ideas about here's breaking Hanson down, sort of deconstructing the band in a way to learn more about what it is that makes us tick. But also, really, in the end, when we come together, that's where you get all those different styles and sounds.
Probably really healthy for you to do as well, to kind of all be able to just separate yourselves out and sort of reset your hard drive, I suppose, because after 30 years, you're carrying around a lot of blurred lines, I'm sure, about who influences what, and you just homogenize.
Yeah, hard drive defragmentation, right?
Yeah. What I think mostly is just that it's really important to keep yourself from getting in ruts, and so you do different things. You do projects that are driven by words or driven by new instruments, and this is kind of a new instrument in a way. We all know how to make records, but we don't normally make records on our own. We've chosen to do it together. And so it works kind of muscles that you're not used to in a way. And you don't
sometimes muscles
your...
you didn't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, you had.
Well, you know, there are crutches that you're used to. And this was such a great time to bring in collaborators too, like David Garza, who produced with us, and Jim Scott, who's just an amazing legend and producer and engineer. And that really made that really possible, I think, for this project.
You guys have kind of defied so many odds. I mean, there's two, there's many case studies to point to two points where you could have fallen down your own well, so to speak. Sibling rivalry, you seem to have succeeded where, for example, the Gallaghers have horribly failed. But also, you were child stars who haven't been to rehab. You've kept your heads... Well, so many that have gone before you haven't. And, you know, I got into a bit of a YouTube rabbit hole with you last night. And I came away sort of thinking, you know, I say to my son, please just look at your career options. You know, I'm sure you say the same to your kids. Don't go into this business. It's so hard and it can fry people. And then I look at you guys and I think, well, actually, no, they've had a really nice time. They're really well adjusted. They're not addicted to anything, as far as I know. They seem to have had a good time with it. How have you done that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, rehab yet. You know, it could still happen. There's always that chance.
There's always time.
I don't think there's a secret. We really have been lucky. We have the things that have, the bad things that have happened have been They haven't killed us. They haven't. The challenges we've faced have not been too destructive. And I think it. I think really, I mean, strong family and music, breaking out as young as we did. In our case, we wrote the songs. It wasn't somebody else's idea. I think
that is a big factor, because especially young artists often feel that they didn't have enough control, and so they kind of almost rebel against themselves or rebel against the kind of perception of who they, you know, who the world sees them as or something like that. And we had our own version of that challenge. We certainly have not felt very well understood in many cases, but we've always had the creative outlet to kind of lean into.
It would probably be a mistake not to say that I think the biggest thing is a sense of self. You know, when you get into the world of being famous and people want a piece of you, it's really hard to find who you are oftentimes. And I think we were lucky that we grew up with a faith background, like where we
spiritual grounding,
you know, like our spiritual grounding and like what we believed in. And that translated through the music and through the stories we were telling and through, like, as people are kind of trying to pull you apart and figure out what you are and make money off of you, you kind of go, well, I'm not here for any of those things. Like, I really know what I want out of this life. And I know what role being famous and being a musician, it's about my heart. It's about who I am. It's about sharing, like, the good things of what I've learned along the way. And when you're in that kind of place, I think it's just a better place.
Yeah.
You know, it's a better place to afford the ups and the downs.
Trying to counteract the ego.
but you push it out in a really healthy way, right? You channel that through music. Some people just go to the bar, you know?
That's true.
They do. And don't misunderstand. It's not that those weren't options, and it's not that we haven't struggled with those things at times.
We can give you a world tour of bars. Hanson's bar world tour. But it is the strange and challenging thing about this process is it is a very high tightrope to walk. Anybody that's in entertainment, anybody that's creative, you have to put yourself out there. I mean, you as a presenter, as a anybody that in this industry, you are walking this, exposing kind of the layers underneath. You have to be creative, and so you have to be stubborn. You have to have some thick skin. You have to to pull on something bigger. And I think part of what he's talking about is having a sense of purpose. That's not just that single didn't work or that thing failed.
Your whole life doesn't revolve around how famous you are or are not.
And that's often what trips people up, right? Because you become so ensconced in a bubble of it that it's really unhealthy. And then what do you write about? Because you've got nothing to share.
This hotel room is just like the last one.
Well,
my crystal is warm.
Exactly.
But I think what you said there, Zay, is really important. It's about having a sense of self, right? Because when you are that famous, that young, for that long, there's every danger that you could become you as reported, as in you that served out to the wider world, which is an edited version of you. It's not you. And to know the you from the reported you is often the secret to sanity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think to me, when you listen to our music, whether it's Bop or whether it's Don't Let Me Down or like sort of every song in
between. Whether it's Weird or The Walk.
I think what you see in our music is really a sense of truth. Whether we always get it right or not, there's this sense that we're seeking something really true and kind of sharing that experience. I hope that's, you know, that's been my goal as an artist. I think you see it in everything we've done, which is to iterate and to grow and to share. You know, you're not writing the same way you did when you were 12. Right, because you have all these new experiences, all this new perspective, right? You know, I'm here today on a trip, you know, with my 11-year-old daughter, like, and like to see her viewing the world and the things I've experienced through this new generation, it's wild, and that seeps into the music you write, and the purpose of the stories you want to tell.
Is this her first trip up to New York?
Yeah, this is her first.
Yeah, see, and so it's interesting too. You were the same age she is right now when you made your first trip.
I came to New York. I was about 11 years old.
Exactly. So. It's wild.
It's wild.
Wow. So you're right. And now you get to look at it through her lens.
Yeah. It's wild.
Well, this month, I can't believe, marks the 25th anniversary of the release of Bop. So are you ready for your first question? Because it kind of sits around that.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's go.
We're not ready, but we're going to take it anyway.
I think that there's probably something that a lot of people miss because of how upbeat and happy Mbop sounds. But actually, the lyrics are about how things don't last always with friends, about potentially losing relationships, and basically trying to hold on to life when it's moving way too fast. And that you know only too well. You spent the 90s on fast forward. So I wondered if we could rewind. Could you select a moment that you'd, if you could, just go back and revisit it and breathe it in because you just didn't have time at the time? Where would you go and why?
One of the things that we have been able to do is meet some of our heroes. Getting to really just realize how strange it is to suddenly reach a pinnacle moment where you're suddenly almost a peer. You don't think you're a peer, but you're presented as if you are when you break out and have some success. One of the things that we didn't do is, because it was a tumultuous time, but I really wish we would have met Michael Jackson, because we were such huge Michael Jackson fans and there were a couple times where that almost happened.
Yeah.
And just, you have these legends, you're within striking distance. And
obviously he was an unusual human. Yeah,
of course.
But very talented human.
Everyone knows all the factors, but he was a legend. He was a huge inspiration. So like knowing when people didn't pass, you go, wow, I wish that ex would have been the same. I don't spend a lot of time.
What would you have asked him out of interest? What would you have asked Michael Jackson? Because clearly, I would imagine that your fandom sits around his music and not his personal choices.
Yeah, it's all music. I mean, it wouldn't have been a question of asking. It would have been a question of just that organic connection where you meet somebody that just gets it. Obviously, incredible performer, incredible legend, incredible talent.
Yeah.
I think it would just be, honestly, the opportunity, just like we've met Billy Joel, we've met Paul McCartney, met some incredible legends, Elton John.
Do you remain cool in those moments? Were you able to remain cool in those moments and show your best self?
I think we're relatively cool with a few. I mean, one of our first interesting celebrity interaction moments was actually before the record came out, or at least for me anyway, which was talking to Steven Tyler on the phone.
Because
we were huge Aerosmith fans, and we wrote a couple of songs with our good friend who ended up producing a bunch of records of ours with us, Mark Hudson, and he wrote the song "Living on the Edge" with Aerosmith,
I know Mark Hudson. Mark Hudson with the multicolored beard.
Oh yes, Mark Hudson with the multicolored beard.
Is there any other Mark Hudson?
He was our voice coach on the first season of X Factor here. Yeah,
that's right.
Worked with Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, exactly. So he said, "Oh, you're Aerosmith fans," and we're like, "Well, yeah. I mean, that's part of why we want to write with you, Mark, because you wrote 'Living on the Edge' and things like that, and also he had his own brother band at one point as well." And he said, "Oh, well, I'll just call Steven right now." And that was really rad. That was really, really cool. You were kind of good.
They're humans.
Exactly.
Just, yeah.
Well, and then the other funny thing was because of those connections, actually had it several times where ran into Steven at various different points, also with his kids, because his wife at the time was from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so there was a bunch of funny little things where.
So I've turned it all into celebrity relive.
But those are
peers, right? That's why you want to go back and revisit it, because you probably want to maximize those moments, right? These are the people that inspire.
One thing that we did at the beginning of our second record that really never saw the light of day and sort of it's in a little bit of a sad picture now is just, so we started working on that record with Rick Ocasek from The Cars, and now sort of realizing sort of the amount of sort of wisdom Rick had, it would have been so to really soak up more of that. He's such a great writer and producer, and now that he's not with us anymore, that's a moment you kind of look back and go, man, I really wish that would have come to fruition and been a record people could hear.
Yeah.
What about the gigs that you forget you've done? Because I don't know about you, but sometimes people just send me clips of things that I'm like, how did I not know that I did that? No clue whatsoever. Just completely forgotten it. Fallen out of my head.
And then, definitely some incredible milestones, especially those early days. I mean, it was a bit of a blur because you were going from zero to, being in a place like Melbourne. Yeah. Some of the stuff is documented, but the scale is really hard to even explain. But at a time, really, the internet's emerging. We really had an internet fan base, probably the
Yeah.
Arguably the first band. Yeah, because of the age and the time. I mean, you had MTV's website and then Hanson's website were the top music websites in the world. And
wow. Because of the, isn't that brilliant, though? That kind of dovetailing of technology, time, the right moment, the right band.
Exactly. It was all happening. But walking on stages, you know, flying to a place like Australia for the first time and going to do what was supposed to be an in-store acoustic performance and looking out at 30,000 people stacked in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's impossible to articulate what that looks like. I mean, we were flying in on helicopters to land in areas because you couldn't physically get to spaces. So like those extreme experiences, you don't so much want to hold on to them too long because your body overloads. Like it's too much of an adrenaline. Yeah. But just the sheer power, you know, I've kind of coined this because I was trying to make sense of it myself and I realized it's true, is you can be destroyed by this sort of the trauma of that kind of success, but you can also use it as a tool to understand what's possible. And so now I think I'm kind of a dangerous person to be around because we've seen the impossible happen. Like we've seen
exactly.
Absolutely impossible scenarios happen. Three guys from Tulsa writing, recording a song in a garage band that don't really seem like they match with anything, grew up with listening to Motown records. And here you are at 11, you know, 14 and 16, performing and having number one record in, you know, 27 countries simultaneously. And now 25 years later to still have this, I mean, this will be the largest consecutive tour we've ever done. 25 years in. I think it's going to end up being 90 plus shows, you know, in about 20 different countries.
It's also the most condensed period of time. Yeah. It's like 90 plus shows in 5 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really great way to look at what was a madness. I mean, like you say, you know, 30,000 people in a parking lot in a country that you've never been to before.
Yeah.
It's quite terrifying. Yeah. Oh, it's exciting. It's
a little bit of
terrifying. Terrifying.
There's one.
That's the next album sorted. Yeah.
Terrifying, by Hanson. Yeah. So one thing people don't think about, which is really kind of, it kind of lets you off the hook, is in a scenario like that, no one can hear what you're saying or singing. So you go on stage and it's just no sound. You could just mime it all. So the one thing you do get to not worry about is, did we sound any good?
Because no one can hear you.
Maybe he didn't. I worried about it.
Yeah, nobody knows that Isaac screwed up the chords to Madeline that day.
But I know this, I guess technically it's still one question, right? You said, what would you relive? But, you know, one of the things that people don't necessarily know, I mean, the fans know this and people that have kind of read a little bit, but we really were, I mentioned Michael Jackson because, you know, we were really living, we grew up in the 80s, of course, so Michael Jackson was big, but the Jackson 5 and the soul records before that and 50s and 60s rock and roll, our heroes were artists that had careers and we'd found the songs that lasted. We'd found the bands that had already, it wasn't just, this is what's happening right now. I mean, we became fans of bands in the 90s as well as we were growing up, but we were really like fans of legends. Like we thought they were the rock stars of our
time.
They were our time for us, like 50s and 60s, that was current for us. And so when we were breaking out, we were experiencing this stuff. We were replaying, wow, I guess this is kind of like a little piece of what the Beatles must have felt, or this is the Jackson 5. And so we were going into that vortex and then asking, okay, so how do we have that longevity? And then nobody can predict it, of course. Nobody can control it.
Yeah.
But we definitely had that perspective that somebody could have a career, not just have a moment.
It's because your attention has always landed with people with great heritage. And you're right, you're not looking at the artists that you're talking about there have got a body of work, right? Stuff that you can dive into and really rummage around in. And that's what you've done.
It's always been the hope.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So any more moments that you would love to go back and revisit?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we had an interesting scenario, and I do slightly lament this.
Okay.
The one downside of being as young as we were was that there were not some of the opportunities that you had to connect with some of the.
You were going to go to the bar.
Well, you were going to go to the party.
I thought you were going to say turning down doing Sesame Street because we didn't want to be seen as a kid band.
Oh, no, actually, that's the one. That's the
you
one.
Didn't we legitimately turn down did Sesame
this.
Street.
So this is an example of both. This is a example of both the trauma and the kind of maybe a little bit, both too, a little too self-preoccupied and a little bit too in the moment or something, I don't know. But we were honestly offered an opportunity to be on Sesame Street. And anybody that knows me knows I am obsessed with Kermit the Frog. And I have a little proper size, like actual Elmo puppet that my wife had made for me. that I would do the voice and everything for the kids when they were little and all this stuff.
When they were little, like last week.
Like last week. Well, now they're 15. Yeah.
For the still boys. Doing it.
Anyway, but we got offered to be on Sesame Street. And we were so frustrated with being pigeonholed as being this, you know, kid band that we looked at each other and went, I'd love to do that. I wish we could do that. Don't feel comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
We didn't do it.
And of course, I mean, I don't, in the States, you know, that's kind of a, that's kind of a legendary show now. I mean, even though it's a kid.
Everywhere. Not just the States. Yeah. I mean, Stevie Wonder did Sesame Street.
I know.
There's so many. I mean, we're picking some interesting ones, but I mean, one of the things that's odd about it is that the things you do, like being at Carnegie Hall, walking on stage at Carnegie Hall, you know, after we'd started a label and we were sort of marking the new dawn of the band with an indie label and launching that third record. That's a moment you'd like to live again. I mean, you know, being able to, like we mentioned, you know, you meet these heroes, but, you know, really hearing your song on radio for the first time and having that like aha moment of like, oh my God, here I am in New York.
Yeah.
And they're playing our record. Like, how did that happen? Like,
yeah.
And being able to, just being able to like do a little bit loop back and feel what that felt like in that moment.
Again, I remember we were in Times Square in the little like van that we were, limousine that we were like driving. I don't remember whether it was from the, it wasn't from the airport, but we were headed to do some press or something. And first time we ever heard it on, you know, on the radio.
And so just appreciate, I think just more than anything, appreciating the things that have happened, that, you know, being able to hold on to that. But, you know, you just keep moving forward.
So those are the kind of moments that you'd like to bottle, right? If you could put that, just hearing your record on the radio for the first time, if you could just take the lid off once in a while and smell that again, that would be so lovely, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. And I would go back to myself and say, do Sesame Street, you bozo.
Or do them all.
Stop it.
Actually, with that in mind, let's move on to my second question because it sits around this area.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I wanted to talk to you about hindsight, because in the 30 years that you've been making music together, you've obviously along the way acquired wisdom, life lessons, all kinds of education. What do you wish you'd known sooner that would have paved ways to better outcomes or just better being for you? Your acquired pearls of wisdoms, please, boys.
Well, you know, I think there is a thing that we really were gifted with early on, which is a sense of self-confidence in the studio and writing and knowing exactly what we needed to do musically to be happy and to live with it for years and years. That kind of discovering legendary artists as your first experience, right? Many of the artists we listened to had already passed away by the time we discovered them. And so you kind of had this perspective of longevity. But what that doesn't give you is the experience mm-hmm. in the business world, right? Yeah. Of record yeah. contracts and this and that. And to see kind of how do I make these steps into places I'm not comfortable with. And I think there are several places in our career where we knew the right choice, but it still took us 2 or 3 years to make it, you know, to leave a label, to leave a manager, to find that place to go out on your own over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I could talk to me, then it would just be to sort of lean in and go, hey, you got to follow your gut on this too. Don't wait. Because, you know, you develop this sense, I think, being a performer, being on stage, reading audiences, of kind of following your gut. And honestly, that usually translates into all the other situations in life. You get a sense about that person. Hey, I need to say something to that person. They look like they're struggling. Or you know, they say this is the best manager in town, but...
But I don't trust them.
I just don't get a good vibe. And so there are situations like that, you know, where we knew on our second album, we needed to leave that label. And we didn't. We released it with them. And now you look back and you go, hey, we should have trusted our gut. We knew what we needed to do.
But when you think about what a gut instinct is, it's actually a physical response to something. It's something that's so strong that you can't contain it. If you think of it like that, you'd listen to it more, right?
In large part, I think we have tried to take those leaps. In some cases, I mean, there's many artists that have suffered much longer than we did. We watched their careers just sort of whittle away.
Yeah,
and so you know that now. I think you asked like, what would you learn earlier? And so I would agree with the sentiment of sticking to your gut, and I think just continuing. I would say knowing how important it is also to find more and more mentorship, especially when you start young.
Yeah,
you know, we
for sure.
craving. You know, we've been very independent, but also we've benefited greatly by the mentors that have shown up. Whether we mentioned Mark Hudson was a great, you know, as a producer, as an arranger, somebody that was, you know, influential and somebody mm-hmm. that we consider a peer. But, you know, people like Danny Korchmar, you know, who co-produced with on our fourth record. And those seeking those people out even earlier in the career to really build more and more of those pillars of, hey, can you be somebody? Because when you're breaking out so young, you're sort of, there you are, and you're supposed to know this stuff. You're supposed to know it all. And we have, you know, good family, good people around us. But still, just like the pearls of wisdom that you wish you could have grabbed in that moment, that you can't, no matter what you say, you can't relive things. You just get that, you get that first moment, that's it.
It's almost like saying to yourself, hey, look, I know you're self-reliant and you kind of feel like you have to be, and that's right. But, you know, make sure to find as many, you know, in your kind of sphere of influence that you can kind of pull in to help you out.
Yeah, find your people.
Yeah, because, yeah, you know, I feel like you can, opinions are not always correct, but if you have as many people that you can trust in your circle, the better off you are.
Probably hire a more aggressive stock broker now.
Actually, that's true too.
And Apple earlier, say that.
Yeah. I would agree with that as well. Yeah,
that would be like just knowing things. Let's know things. You know?
Exactly.
There's going to be this little car company. Wow. They're going to go electric, and you just get it. Yeah. What you're talking about too is really finding people who have been through it already.
Exactly.
You know, we were gifted this environment that was three brothers who could share the burden, right? But even though we were sharing a lot of it, which I think helped us through so many scenarios, we still were insulated looking inward without a lot of sort of, there was no Sherpa, there was no guide, you know, there was no, it's hard to find a guide for this kind of
Band
meteoric rise.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Who's been through that? But I think what they're both talking about is that sense of really sort of looking out in the world and saying, I'm going to need help. And so instead of waiting until it's gotten so crazy, I don't know what to do, really keep your eyes open for those people who can give you a little perspective, mm-hmm. you know, from the top of the mountain.
Because it is, I mean, like you're right. You talk about right at the beginning of this answer. You said, you know, you had this confidence, this, you were self-assured as musicians in the studio because it's what you do. But when you start looking at contracts or you're sitting in marketing meetings or they're talking about offsetting costs against advances and percentages, you're thinking, hang on a minute, I'm still at school. You know, I haven't even got an exam qualification. You know, it's, you're expected to know about a job that you never applied for.
Yeah, well, right. I think it's also the fame game is the other thing, right? Which I think is a lot of what you're also talking about, Zach, too. Well, it's not just the business element. It's also the kind of like, how do we play this popularity contest game in the right way? How do you know what to lean into and what not to? Some of that is your own personal choice, and you have to make that. But I often think, too, you know, I mean, we always had this kind of back and forth kind of feeling of like, okay, you want to be serious enough because we took what we did seriously, but then sometimes we took it too seriously. Like going back to, it's like the Sesame Street thing where you're like, well, that was, I understand why I made the decision, but in that particular case, you know, I should have listened to our manager who said, are you sure?
A career is much more like a song than it is like a pie chart, in the sense that a song has different meaning for you at different points in your life.
Yeah.
And you can experience both the joy of youth in a song and sort of the melancholy of lost time in that same song. And I think that's really the really hard part when you're in it, in any moment where life is just so full. And this is true of parenting too, looking at your kids. You know, I have five kids and, you know, thinking about a minute ago I had one and now I have five, right? And I think, you know, that's the hard thing when you're in it and you're really struggling to tell your story, to realize no matter how good of a job you do today, it will change tomorrow and it will change a year from now. And people will begin to see all of those experiences through a collective. And so all you have to do is worry about the collective, the big picture over time. Do it today. Do whatever comes, do it today. But know that what you do today will be seen through the lens of time. And so in 30 years, what might have been a bad day might be a great story that you tell in a different
right,
way.
Exactly. Isn't right. it funny how jokes often are tragedies in reality? Like in the moment, so, it's a tragedy. You know.
So, you know, so it's sort of, it's. I think it's just holding it.
I wrecked my car.
Yeah, probably. It's probably holding it a little looser and knowing
open hands
that because you know you don't control it, you don't try and control everything. You just control yourself.
This is great wisdom. How on earth have you managed to get to such a sensible and intelligent headspace? I commend you.
I married a great woman. She beat it into me.
Did she really? You've all been married, gosh, how many years?
Tim's been married almost 20 years. Zach's been married almost 16, same for me.
Wow. Congratulations. See, when I say you defy every odds, you're the band of brothers that didn't do the Gallagher thing and fall out. You married your sweethearts and you're still together and you have enough children to open a small school. And you still really like each other.
I don't know about that last one.
Okay, sorry.
Depends on the day. No, I'm kidding.
We have a great deal of respect for each other, and we do like each other. We don't agree a lot of times. But I think, you know, I mean, you're kind of going back to these, you know, not to think we have all the answers, because we definitely do not, and I definitely do not. But I do think there's just such an obsession with, like, with youth and with self in the world. I think that a lot of the joy is missed. That, you know, you gain a lot by giving a lot. You know, you gain a lot by trying to stand by somebody. You know, people that, you know, if anybody that has kids knows, it's very intense. It's very stressful. But you then fall in love with these humans because you've given to one another. And you've given so much of yourself to
them.
Like we're here in New York, and we lived in New York for a few years, you know, on and off as we launched our label back in 2004, three, four, five.
Yeah.
After we lived through a winter in New York, I was set on the fact that all New Yorkers that lived through a winter should get some sort of medal that says, I survived New York in the winter. And I think that's with kids, with family, with business, you know, with something long. I think
like wearing your badges of survival, like I think is one of the things that people miss about doing hard things. Like if you don't do any hard things, you don't get any badges, right? You don't get to, you just kept. So I think that's part of it. It's just kind of having realized, and honestly, I would say.
Actually, good things are hard.
Good things
that's
are hard.
The first place.
I was going to say, the best things are the hardest things to do, you know?
In a weird way, like writing songs, doing music, it's kind of a little microcosm because it shouldn't be painful, but it takes effort. It takes focus. It takes some sort of determination. Like you don't just wake up like, hey, I just wrote a book last night. It sort of takes a little bit of doing.
And I also think,
that is.
And going back to like gut instinct kind of stuff, like and the hard work, you know, I think about that time when I took a mattress to the dump, except for I didn't take the few minutes to properly tie it down.
Oh, God.
And as it goes hurling across the highway, I think, oh, God.
I really should have done the work.
Oh, man, nothing more humbling and reminder of always do it the right way, even though it takes longer.
I'm glad that's harder. The story that you can see, though. We think of hard work.
I just want relatable things in some way or another.
Mattress, like your redneck guys, like, grandma sailed that mattress, you just chopped it up and laid it on the backyard. I don't know if that relates to anyone in the UK, but, you know.
We get it. Don't worry. We have Netflix. Yeah. We understand.
You have Tiger King.
You know Tiger King. It's in Oklahoma.
Oh, okay. Now it makes total sense. Do you know them?
No.
What's his name?
Joe Exotic.
No.
We are not related.
Joe Exotic,
And of course. I think we all want to put this on record. We also did not vote for Joe Exotic. We're not really a political band, but that we want to be political about.
But hey, you know what? God bless America. He put his name on the ballot and he didn't win.
My wife, we watched that show and she just looked at me and goes, did you know there were this many tigers when you made me move to Oklahoma?
Nobody knows.
I'm like, no one knows. I'm like, I had an inkling. I'm sorry.
My third and final question. Has one of your wives sat at the very heart of it? Are you ready? Isaac, the story of how you met your wife, I mean, it really chimed with me. You saw her, have I got this right? You saw her in a crowd at a gig. And you knew there was a connection. There was something. And you went to the stage manager. It's hormones. Is that what we're calling it? You went to the stage manager and said, you have to stop her leaving.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of what has become a very happy marriage and a beautiful family. I mean, as moments go, it's courageous, it's audacious, and it's frankly inspiring. I want to know when else you've all seized the moment to make something as memorable and meaningful happen for you.
I think that one takes the cake for me as a whole. It was both the most persistent and bravest moment in some ways that because I had to try hard.
What people may not realize, so Isaac met his wife. By getting stage manager, hey, that girl, I got to meet that girl.
I mean, it sounds grubby, I'll be honest. It doesn't sound, I mean, I struggle to make it sound romantic. It could also be borderline a bit like...
The story people don't know is Taylor and I met both of our wives at a concert, at the same concert. Isaac told someone, oh, hey, I've got to meet those girls, and they happen to be my wife and Taylor's wife.
You shut up.
It wasn't quite like that, but that's what it was like.
Oh my God. Okay, so start right. Rewind. Start at the beginning. How did this unfold?
That's not exactly this.
Let's just simplify it. We met them on tour in Atlanta, and yes, Isaac technically met both of our wives before.
First, yes.
So I think we should stop.
I mean, and honestly, I'm starting to smell some sort of Netflix series that charts your serial philandering.
I like to think of it as I'm the matchmaker.
Right. It's fine.
All that?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And then all of the great things in your life, you owe me.
I mean, Isaac, I'm trusting that this was before you'd actually met your wife that you were kind of sending out for these women.
Absolutely.
Many years.
Yeah.
How did it work? These girls, your wives, were at a gig and he spotted them first?
Yes. No, they were invited by somebody that toured with us.
And they had been at a, we did a series of events with Macy's where they were like a, we did fashion events with them. And Zach's wife, now wife, was one of the models at the,
you can see it at the show. And then,
you guys are being too detailed. It's not fun anymore.
Right.
Okay.
You know, and then I made sure that, they came and said hello.
Yes. Yes. He said, look at those beautiful girls.
Yes.
They shouldn't be with those grubby crew guys.
Exactly.
They should be here on the good bus. but as seize the moments go, I mean, it's pretty spectacular. How receptive were they when they were invited to come and meet you? Or was there a little bit of like,
They were very
well,
receptive.
Why don't we go back to Nikki? How receptive was your wife?
I think she was kind of freaked out, actually, to be honest.
<Not reductive.
laughs> Well, my wife is actually quite introverted, and I think she was a little bit thrown because I was so gung-ho, like, hey, we should go out, we should do some stuff. I'm only here for so long. It's New Orleans, let's go have a good time. She's there with her friend, you know, and we hung out all night until the bus had to leave, and went dancing in on Bourbon Street. I think impressed because, you know, she stuck around. She did give me her number at the end and we did get a photo. Yeah. Absolutely.
You did?
Yeah.
And you still have it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. the night we met.
Yeah. It's one of those, usually people are asking for photos with you. You were like, can I get a photo?
Actually, yeah, that is true. The photo was on my camera.
Yeah, he's like, I'm never going to forget you.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's take a photo quick.
But was it as instantaneous as the anecdote suggests? Was it that moment of like, that's it, she's the one?
Well, I legitimately, I don't know about these guys when they met their wives, but I legitimately had a panic moment because she was kind of not impressed by the famousness and the, you know, we're at the show thing. She was kind of like, oh, he's just flirting with the crowd. She was being, now knowing my wife now, I understand why she was being that way. And it doesn't cease to be funny, but she was going to leave. She was legitimately going to leave.
I literally sung the entire show to her.
Yes. I had sung the entire show to her. I threw a guitar pick at her and hit her with it. She still has the guitar pick. She was going to leave. I was like, she's 6-something feet away, you know, just a few people back from the barricade at the show. And I'm like, you go over there, you know? And she's like, oh, that's where the merch is. He's telling us to go buy a t-shirt. Are you friggin' serious? I make an ass of myself in public. And she's like, oh, we're going to leave. And that was the moment I panicked because I'd made it very clear. You know, that I was thoroughly interested in meeting her and she was going to leave. And so I got the stage manager and said, you see those two girls? Cause she was there with a friend who had really like bright blonde hair. I'm like, don't let those two people leave.
Yeah. You know, entrapment.
It doesn't
of some
really
sort.
Sound too much romantic when I hear it. It sounds a little more stalkery, controlling.
She didn't say romantic. Yeah. She said seize the moment.
Yeah. It was definitely a seize.
Yeah,
the
I mean, slash injunction.
Exactly. I'm going to try and save us from the details of telling more of our stories about our romantic moments and say, exactly. So one of the early kind of semi-local people that made a difference in our career was a guy named Jim Halsey, who's now in his 90s, still works, represents many, many artists. And
Oak Ridge Boys, amongst others.
I mean, he represented like half the country artists in the last, 30 years.
Wow.
Incredible guy. He was doing a conference in our hometown where he was bringing people together to try and sort of, curate, bringing more people into management and labels and trying to find artists.
Yeah, trying to talk to people in Oklahoma about it. This is how the music business works.
We knew he was in town. And so he was staying at a hotel. And one morning, both of our folks, our mom is extremely tenacious. And we were very young at this time. Said, hey, we know that he's going to be here. Jim Halsey's going to be there. We really should go try and make sure to meet him. So we got up uninvited
you know, at 7 a.m. that morning, showed up in at the hotel.
At 7:30.
7:30, ready to sing in our with our three.
In the lobby.
And my our dad, at the time, our dad calls upstairs. Again, this was, they were, our folks were, you know, never the stage parents. Like, they were very much, but they were willing to jump in and kind of, they got it, that we really wanted to do it.
They weren't, they were assertive.
So so there we are in the lobby. And
he calls this guy.
Calls up to the room, and Jim goes hello and says, "Hey, my Walker Hansen. I've got, my sons are performers, and they really, you know, they're really interested in making music, and I'd love to get a chance to talk to you." And he said, "That's great. The conference, you know, is happening, you know, later today." And he said, "No, you don't understand. We're in the lobby right now." And so Jim, you know, Jim comes down and, you know, kind of pulls
good
himself
man.
Together.
Good man.
And let me just tell you this: before you sing, you're the only ones in the lobby.
You're the only ones in the lobby.
Right. So that's, and hence, you know, the tenacity. You know, and there's so many examples.
Be the only one in the lobby.
Be the first one in the lobby.
Absolutely. Wow.
You know, there's, I mean, whether it was telling the story.
That's great.
The label, who ultimately signed us, you know, was an unlikely concert, you know, on the flatbed of a truck, you know, out in a tiny little town called Coffeyville, Kansas. You know, that was the guy that signed us was at that show where you're like, oh man, this is the worst.
Like, show. Of all the shows to come to, we have no fans. They'd rather hear us sing country music. We don't do country music.
You know, so there's so many of those things that when people tell their stories, you know, you talk about Carnegie Hall, you talk about the symphony, you talk about the hits, you talk about the 30,000 people in a parking lot. But but really, the power is in being the first one, the only one in the lobby, being the last one to leave, you know, hopping on the plane to try and meet that one person you think might make a difference, to, you know, those things where you really kind of didn't have a guarantee. You know, even starting the label, you know, when we started the label in 2003, 2004, we'd had a lot of success. We had a very high value as a, you know, an entity, but people really didn't know what to do with us. You know, a lot of people around us, they did pretty much expected us to sort of fold in a way, to kind of cower at the moment. And not because we didn't have a certain amount of success potential. It was just a sense of, well, there's too many question marks. You know, this is probably going to start to fizzle out. And so that those are the moments that really define whether or not you have a career. And sort of, you know, seizing the moment. There's a long list of those. And they're not, most of them are not.
They're not glamorous.
They're not like, and then I met my wife. You know?
Because you never have to stop seizing moments. But if you understand the power of them, and because you take a gamble and it pays off, if you are the first in the lobby, then you understand that those gamble moments can come in. They can, you know, you can cash them in big time.
Yeah.
What they say is you can't win games you don't play, right? And so there's no guarantees. But if you're not in the lobby, no one's going to hear you sing.
And I love the fact that he came down and acknowledged that you were the first in the lobby. I mean, did he do anything with you guys? Did he sign you? Or was it just that one kind of soundbite that fueled you on?
He represented really kind of giving us a strong foundation to actually go after it.
He saved our butts, really.
What he did is he introduced us to a really credible music attorney that became kind of the old guard, literally, you know, incredible attorney. And as we began to pitch and, you know, really go after getting signed or find a manager, he saved us from that. Attorney saved us from signing a deal that would have really ruined our lives. A big label that was notorious for signing people with horrible, horrible deals. Jim introduced us to kind of a pathway, honestly, to building a really strong team. Like that was where that was really, and we're still friends with Jim. I mean, he's in his 90s and still works every day. And,
yeah.
Still manages the Oak Ridge Boys, a classic country band. And, the
it's kind of Clive Davis with a Stetson, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And more character. But, you know, which doesn't say a lot.
Isn't that remarkable, though? Because in so many ways, that moment, you know, he was a bit of a guardian angel there. You know, the wrong deal can freeze your career, can stop you releasing music. It can kill your soul. You know,
and certain things almost did. I mean, you know, like going back to that as an example, just for people that just to understand something, like, so you have songwriting royalties that you get paid. If we would have signed the deal that we were originally offered
by
that label, and the attorney said, "Hey, don't do it." And this attorney again was, you know, was brought to us by Jim Halsey. We would have given away almost half of all of our songwriting royalties for the rest of our lives.
Wow. So they want, what's what they call impetuity, is that right?
In perpetuity. Yeah.
In perpetuity, yes.
Perpetuity, which basically means eternity.
Yeah.
Until the return of Christ.
Exactly.
That eternity.
they wanted to shrink it down. Yeah.
Yeah. This is something that George Michael fought. Yeah. And Prince. And you need people like that. And it damaged their careers. It damaged their ability to make music and put it out to people. But you need people like that that stand up on a principle.
And one of the things it points to, and we're getting fairly deep into this discussion, but it points to being at a different point in your career. And we're all different in the way we create things. But I know I can feel in myself, we've still got hopefully many, many more years being a creator. But I do have a sense more than ever of wanting to be that for other people. And I'm wanting to impart, wanting to save somebody's life by giving them the power to be to be that dangerous, creative force that actually knows their stuff, that knows their business, that knows how to make
this. And takes what you did and pales it and does something what you've done pales in comparison to what they've done.
To be able to inspire people and to be able to be a steward for other creators, especially artists that, it's this strange thing that, most, it's not that it's not any, it takes any less effort, because it takes in many cases, I think, more effort than most career paths. But you do have a strange thing where you have this risk of, if you break, oftentimes people that do break in music, you don't go through 5 years of school to then go become, become an attorney or a doctor or to be, you could go from a garage to a stadium. It can happen. And so when that happens, to be prepared to know how to manage that, is really, it's like you're at huge risk. But there's a lot that can be learned. And the minute you have those tools, you're like, oh, I get it. I can look out for that. Yeah. So, and anyway, we digress. But it is...
Thanks to Jim for saving our butts.
Yeah, he really did. And I've told him that recently. You talked about reflecting what you would learn, what you'd do differently. And that seeking guidance, and seizing moments and kind of having those extra... It's interesting because there are sort of two ends of the spectrum, having the vision and the wisdom, and then also seizing the now. They're both,
having the chutzpah,
they're both equally
to go
relevant.
Out there.
Yeah, having that fire,
yeah.
Yeah,
they kind of bookend each other, don't they? If you get them both aligned at the beginning and the end of your journey, then, great things can happen in between. Gentlemen, honestly, you are a tonic, not only on record, but in conversation as well. It's been an absolute pleasure to have breakfast with you this morning.
Thank you.
Give my very best to New York. I hope you've enjoyed White Wine Question Time. I'm sorry about the lack of wine.
Very
next
enjoyable.
Next time with wine.
Yes.
We'll yes, please. Yes, please. And you're back in the UK. You're coming back to the UK. Is that right?
We will be in the UK in June and then all over Europe. So let's do it in person.
And Red, Green and Blue is out now wherever you get your music. And the tour dates can be found on one of the world's most visited internet sites from the 90s, Hanson.net. Is that right?
That's right. Thank you.
Hey! Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And if you fancy hearing more great chat with sonically gifted music superstars, have a listen to our back catalogue, where you can find episodes with the likes of Steps, Gary Barlow, Lisa Stansfield, Bananarama, Ella Henderson, Ray, Danny Minogue, Ali Jones, Sophie Ellis Spector, Elfie Bowen, Michael Ball, James Morrison, Jack Severetti. I mean, I've run out of breath, but they're all in there and many more. As always, my thanks to Ben Robbins and the Yahoo Studios team for producing this show alongside me. And editing is this week by Andy Angson. Our music, as always, comes from Andy Bell. And don't forget to check out his solo material or his work with Ride and Oasis wherever you get your music. I'll be back next Friday with more great guests. Until then, look after yourselves.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.